Welcome to the Information Entropy Podcast. Well, this week, we'll be unraveling the mysteries of how organisms know where and how to develop their distinctive body parts. Have you ever wondered how your body knew where to grow its arms or why certain traits are found across the animal kingdom? Join us as we dive into the world of genetic blueprints, heme-box genes, and the fascinating, can't even say the word, I'm so excited, stories of evolution that shape the living world. From the wacky to the wonderful, explore how life's diversity is rooted in a shared code. I'm Mitchell Gang, I'm joined as per usual by Tom Jenks. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing all right, mate, how are you?
We had a doing wonderful. We had a Magic the Gathering pit stop in between recording sessions.
Yeah,
and now we're back.
We are
primed, right, ready to go.
Back,
coiled springs, just ready to overcompress ourselves and snap. Yeah, that's the saying, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it goes. Yeah, we'll just keep going until we keel over.
Mate. Life at the moment, that just feels like life. It just keep going until something goes pop.
Yeah, I feel you. I was saying to you, I went to get my eyes tested, you know, being the ripe old age of 30 now. I need glasses. I needed them anyway, I just hadn't worn them in like 6 months because during the move, well, it must be a year then. During the move last year, they broke into three pieces. I have two arms and the lenses, which can very roughly be sellotaped back together, but it's not a comfortable experience. So, yes.
two arms and a lens.
Yes, that did not go according to plan. But, hey-ho, fun times?
Already does, yeah? Already does.
What does?
Go to plan.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Best laid plans of mice and men, I heard.
Yeah, well, you know, if only they spoke to each other, then the plan would be better.
Yeah, and if one of them wasn't mentally slow.
I wondered where you were going with that. Oof. Bloody hell.
You know what? I'm tired. My brain struggled with working out what the right word was. So, apologies.
Okay. Let's save you from that. If you want to find us.
Does Lenny have a diagnosis? Like, I don't want to be like diminishing of it.
Officially, I think no, but not many people did at that time.
It just says he exhibits characteristics of autism, intellectually disabled man. If he's not intellectually disabled, the story wouldn't work. Differential diagnosis of Lenny Small by Howard Fisher in Sweden. Yeah, so lots of references there.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you'd like to reference us on social media at InfoEntropyPod and at InformationEntropyPod on Instagram, do it. We appreciate your faces. Cool. So I've got some news to kick us off this week.
Yeah, your turn.
My turn. So this is very exciting news for me as a whale. Well, I guess I'm a dolphin biologist, but it's close enough. Exciting news for whale biologists. For the first time ever, two humpback whales had been caught having sex, and it was filmed. Now, you might think, for such social creatures, we must know how they reproduce and things. But, you know, we still have no idea where whale sharks come from. We only found out where eels came from the other month, right? There's still many things, even on big creatures, that are a mystery to us. So, while their social behaviours and migration patterns are fairly well documented, their reproductive activities are quite mysterious to us, and their copulation previous to this had never been documented. It was only assumed about how that took place. Now, it's obvious that, obviously, they do copulate, and we know pretty much where they do it, because they gather and we watch them have like heat runs and compete for mates and things like that. And we know that cetaceans in particular, especially bottlenose dolphins, engage in sexual activity to, let's say, practice their moves, to improve social bonding, to enforce or reinforce dominance, reduce the reproductive opportunities for other individuals, and even to just ease social tensions. Now, the problem, it's not really a problem. It's just that when the video was analysed, it wasn't quite what we expected the moment to be. Firstly, the two individuals were both male. No, it never is. You know, the first time, it's always awkward. the two individuals were both male, so that's not what they were fully expecting to see. However, not uncommon in the animal kingdom or in cetaceans. It happens quite regularly. It's just a socio-sexual interaction that they have. However, what the two photographers noticed, it approached a private boat. They weren't even researchers. They were just happened to be diving nearby, and the whales came by. One of the whales seemed to be in very poor health, very thin, covered in lice, and had a significant injury to its lower jaw, suggesting that it had been hit by a ship. The second whale, however, was in just great physical condition and was just, you know, as you said in last week's episode, just rocking out with his cock out and just repeatedly approaching this unwell, severely ill whale, holding in place with his pectoral fins, and then repeatedly penetrated the genital slit of the unfortunate.
Why would you say it like that?
Well, that's just
I was having a good day.
Today, that's just what
why would
called.
You say those words in those orders?
I mean, this is the first documentation we have of this, and that's what happened. So whales, male and female, have genital slits. Yes. So we don't really know why this was happening. You know, it could have been like a reforming a social bond with a friend who is ill. And that's what happens in the whale world. It could also have just been one really healthy whale. Dominating, but that sounds wrong. showing dominance over a really unhealthy whale and just getting some practice in while he could. Honestly, we don't know. But it somewhat confirms about how we thought that they would have sex. And yeah, but unfortunately, I think we left that experience with more questions than we had before we went into it. And obviously, humpback whales, as graceful as they are, just have absolutely no... You know, there's no social filter there. You know, for humpback whales, never a bad time for sex. Are you potentially dying? Sex. I'm going to use you for practice then, is essentially what this male is doing. So, yes. I told you I had a doozy.
I didn't realise you were going to ruin my first day of my holiday.
Well,
essentially, the start of my holiday.
I didn't want you to get too excited, you know?
for my holiday.
Yeah, how dare you have a nice time.
Yeah. You want to go snowboarding? No. You're going to be thinking about...
Yeah, no, you can still go snowboarding. You can just think about the genital slits of humpback whales at the same time. Mitchell, why are you dissociating?
You just keep saying it. You just keep saying the same series of words.
Yeah. Is it just those two particular words that are really grossing you out? And why?
Fine. Nothing wrong with those words. It's the fact that you keep saying and putting emphasis on them.
I'm not trying to. You know, there's no difference to like a cloaca. Really.
No difference whatsoever. No, but like, I don't know. It's just the word slip just isn't...
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
It's not...
All right, well, let's move
vibing
on from this
with me
then.
On this evening.
Yeah, okay. Let's move on from this then.
Yeah, so the body plans.
The body plan. You can tell I picked this topic. So I thought it was interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, how does your body actually know where your arm should go, you know? Just seems a bit wild.
It's crazy.
So here we are.
you got any facts, Tom, about this?
I did. And then it turns out the fact was wrong.
Okay.
So I could dispel a myth for people, I suppose. If this was one of the other reasons why I wanted to do this topic. I was speaking to George about fish, and she was like, oh, you know, catfish, there's certain species of catfish, and they will grow to the size of the tank that they are in.
And I heard that as well.
They are fine. And then there are other species of catfish who their body will grow and then stop growing to the size of the tank they're in. But then the organs will just continue. Like, they didn't get the message. They need to stop growing. And then obviously all the organs get squished and the fish dies.
Squishy fishy.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, well, how would the organs know in one species to stop and not in the other? So it got me thinking about the body plan and the homeobox genes, which we'll come on to in a bit. But it is quite a common thought that fish will grow to the size of the tank they're in. And there was some truth to that, in the sense that if the tank isn't big enough, the fish size will be stunted. However, it's no longer a healthy fish at that point. Like, it should be bigger. However, it just doesn't have the resources or space to get bigger. So it will be slightly stunted in growth, but that doesn't mean it's doing it in a healthy capacity. No fish really has that capability. They are, in a sense, pre-programmed, as we are. You know, there are environmental factors as well that influence, like, how tall you get and things like that. But they shouldn't, in a sense, be growing to their tank size. They should just be growing to the size that they were, you know, the size of their species. Unfortunately, catfish get mahoosive. They can do so. If you have them in tanks, they can get severely stunted, and I guess maybe some species have a better regulation of internal stunting that goes along with that, and other species don't. So maybe that's where there's a bit of cross thought there. So yes, technically, at least from what I could understand and find, because you go to one website, it says one thing; you go to another website, they say another. I don't think, and please feel free to correct me if your experience is different or you know better than I do, but fish don't grow to the size of their tank. They just get stunted in growth. It doesn't mean it's like a healthy thing that they're doing. Yeah. Or a normal thing. So there's my sort of fact. That's not a fact.
When is a fact not a fact? When it's a stunted fish.
Exactly. And it really, you know, what is a fish? Might as well be a stunted fish.
I heard everything's a fish.
Everything is
that
fish.
Lives in the water.
Basically.
Is a fish. Like, yeah. Crab, fish. You know?
You know?
Manatee, also fish.
There is some theories going around the internet that the crab is the most well-designed animal. Because the amount of species which converge on the body plan of a crab is astronomical.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think just having a small, tough outer shell, it's just a good way to be.
Yeah. Especially, like, I imagine, like, sci-fi things where it's like everything weirdly looks like a crab. Or, like, alien plants. You know, I assume they've done, like, research into being like, so what would survive in this environment? Probably something that's, you know, got out of body, it's got many legs, got some powerful claws. Oh, wait, no, I'm just describing a crab.
Yeah, there was a
let's just make it look a bit like a sci-fi crab.
There was an opinion piece that came out in Scientific America in 2023 called "Why Do Animals Keep Evolving into Crabs?"
I think I've read that,
and I would recommend it. It's a good read. It's interesting, but yeah, flat rounded shell, tail that's folded underneath the body. Evolution just seems to like this body plan. It's a good way.
Makes sense.
And it's evolved five separate times, converged onto that. So it's not like one animal split into five different species that became a crab. Yeah. The crab body shape evolved five separate, completely unrelated times among decapod crustaceans. Includes crabs, lobsters, shrimp, copepods. Yeah. Crabs. Get them.
Hashtag crab.
Wait.
Yeah. No, don't get them.
don't get crabs.
Go fishing. Don't go crabbing. Go fishing for a crab. Because they're fish, as we've decided.
Yes. Well, they don't have tails, so maybe they are their own thing. Well, I guess they do have tails.
Do they have tails?
Yeah, they kind of they hook underneath their carapace, and
carapace.
So you can tell the difference between a male and a female, because I think the females have a rounded tip to their tail, whereas males have a pointed tip, and that's where they'll carry their egg sac as well. And there's a really cool barnacle which acts as a parasite of crabs that will turn the male crabs, pump them full of female hormones, make them think that they are carrying a batch of eggs, and then make them care for them, essentially turn them into female crabs. But the egg sac that they're carrying is actually an egg sac of this parasite. So cool. And terrifying.
Yeah.
I guess an example of how the body plan can be hacked. Boom, pulled that back. That's a baby. Oh dear. Right. What have you got then, mate? Where would you like to start?
What have I got? Well, I was gonna say there's homeobox genes that I was gonna talk about very briefly as a fact.
Yes.
They are crucial for the development of the body plans. They're like the foundation. They determine the head to tail axis in embryos, and they are remarkably similar across all species, from flies to humans. And then a part of that is the Hox genes.
Other way around. The homeobox genes are part of the Hox genes. Homeobox is a lower level of Hox. The homeobox gene is found within the Hox genes.
Sorry, yes. Yeah. You know what? If you read your notes where it says these genes are a subset of the larger homeobox gene family, are they essentially encode transcription factors that specify the positions and the regional identities of the embryonic segments? Do you know when you say a word that you think you're going to get wrong, but you say it right, so you do a dramatic pause afterwards, like, did I actually nail? Yeah, okay. It's not even a hard word.
You just have to replay embryonic,
ensuring that the body structures form in their correct places. The presence of the Hox gene across bilateria, which are animals with a clear head-to-tail axis, and their discovery in Cnidaria.
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 The sea is silent.
Silent sea. I don't know why the sea's silent. Cnidaria,
because they're jellyfish and corals.
Sorry, are you actually implying that because they're jellyfish and corals, that means the sea should be silent? Because that is exactly what it sounded like you just
said.
They
just have to be different, you know?
It's because if you look at the Cnidaria sideways, the sea looks like a jellyfish, and therefore it has to be silent.
Yeah, and then and they live in the sea. Because they live in the sea and there is a sea, they cancel each other out, you know?
Right, that's nailed it. You know what? From now on, I'm going to remember it. Such as sea anemones indicate their ancient origins, having arisen over 550 million years ago in Metazoa. This widespread occurrence underscores their fundamental role in animal development. The arrangement of the Hox gene often in clusters and their staggered expression patterns along through embryonic heads of the axis demonstrate a shared ancient function across bilaterian animals to specify segmental identity. Well, we don't really want to go down into identity stuff because that is a bag of just doesn't really work, does it, Tom?
No, it doesn't. And we did that a few episodes ago.
Did we do identity of animals, did we? Well, oh, we did. Well, we did identity, we did animals, but I think we did it because we... In our past life, we interviewed someone that was trying to use gold and a laser for identification of animals.
Yeah, in electron microscopy.
Yeah.
So
to make music.
Yes, he was barcoding them as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, barcoding them and then making music out of those barcodes so animals could be identified by their song. And then he got some artists to make a song for some of the things they use.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Definitely pretty cool. I don't know if that's still going on.
Probably.
Yes. Homeobox is a pretty important thing that's quite well conserved across many species. Any more facts?
Well, that wasn't a fact. This is me explaining about the role of the Hox gene in body plan development. It exhibits a very high degree of conservation, meaning that their basic function and the mechanisms by which they regulate developmental processes have remained relatively unchanged throughout evolution. This is so much so that the Hox protein from one species, e.g. a chicken, can release its counterpart in another species, e.g. a fly, and still perform a similar function. Not the exact same, but the similar. This functional conservatism is a testament to the crucial role these genes play in a developmental biology.
Yes. Study of like fetal development and things like that.
Yeah.
It is wild to me. Even though I've researched, I just still don't really understand how it works. It's one of those kind of things that's just like magic to me. It just fits in the box of like biological magic. You know, you just start as a ball of cells, and then at some point it goes, okay, the head's there. But I still don't quite get how it decides that's where the head should go, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I get how it works. So the different genes within the homeobox gene will be turned on at different times. So they're temporally separated in their activation. And I get that's how it works. Right, that's that's the function, but I don't get how that works. What regulates the regulation? Do you know what I mean? I think it's one of those questions you just infinitely go back on and don't really arrive anywhere. Yeah.
Who regulates the unregulatable?
Right?
Yeah. Who watches the watchman, as they say?
If no one, then we're all screwed.
Yeah.
So, yes, particularly known for their role in anterior to posterior axis formation, which is head to tail. And obviously mutations and abnormalities can lead to significant developmental defects. And in those experiments where they were inserting chicken Hox genes into flies, that's exactly what they saw. But yeah, it is interesting. It is one of the most conserved pieces of DNA across taxa that I think we've ever seen, suggesting it's a very primal thing.
Is there one that's not head to tail? That's the opposite. That's like side to side.
Yes, there are many different kinds, which I've got a list of.
Oh, reel them off.
Yeah, so we've got different types of body plans in the animal kingdom. So I was just going to go through these and why maybe different species have adapted to have these. So bilateral symmetry is what we are most used to, because that is what we exhibit. So the body is organized into two similar halves. Like if you just cut someone down the middle, one side will be symmetrical to the other side. You have a distinct right and left mirroring each other, and you normally have a defined front and back, as well as top and bottom. So you have anterior, posterior, dorsal, and ventral. This can be quite advantageous because bilateral symmetry is associated with directional movement and more complex cephalized nervous system. That means the concentration of sensory organs and nervous tissues at the head or anterior end. So there are many things which are bilaterally symmetrical. Most mammals, I think, birds, sharks, fish, dogs, cats. You know, they have a head, they have a tail, back, front. The next thing is radial symmetry.
This is like externally symmetrical, though, because our internals aren't symmetrical.
No.
All those people that are following the same the same mental paths as me, being like, well, the heart isn't symmetrical, it's on one side.
Yes, it's the like, same liver general.
Is not a symmetrical shape. It's like it's not a perfect circle.
No.
It's not even in a line of... Because when you say symmetrical, I'm thinking like line from like from your feet, where the middle of your feet on the floor to your head, symmetrical down the middle, but it's exactly.
No, it's not exactly, but that is where we were drawing the line in a bilateral symmetrical species. We do draw the line like just straight up the front, from top of the head down to between the feet. But of course, it's not 100% symmetrical, as you say. You have your heart on one side, your liver's slightly out of place on another, right? But the overall structure is symmetrical, but it is normally an external examination. Yeah. But you normally find that, you know, 90% of the insides are also symmetrical as well. The next type that's very common is radial symmetry. So if you think about jellyfish and you see anemones,
yeah,
it involves body parts arranged around a central axis like spokes on a wheel. There's no distinct front or back here, and any plane passing through the central axis creates similar halves. So like a cake, no matter where you chop it, one side, as long as you're going through the middle, the two halves should be pretty much similar. This is well suited for organisms that remain anchored in one place or move in a slow circular manner. So that's why corals follow this, as well as jellyfish, which just kind of get pushed around. They're basically plankton, jellyfish. Plankton being any animal that cannot control its movement through the water column and is controlled by the movement of currents. Then you have asymmetrical organisms, where there is just no symmetry whatsoever. The body lacks any defined pattern, and a good example of this are sponges.
Fungi.
Fungi. Yes. Spongy.
No.
Fungi is symmetrical, but it also depends what part of it you're speaking about, right? Because when we think of fungi, we think of typically what is the flowering part, right? The actual mushrooms. But I guess the rhizomes and the fungal network could be considered somewhat random and asymmetric. You also have pentaradial symmetry. This is a body plan which is a variation of radial symmetry, but it's seen a lot in organisms like starfish. And because there's so many starfish-like organisms, it's given its own category. This is where the body parts are arranged in five or multiples of five along a central disc. And again, associated with slow movement and bottom-dwelling lifestyles. Provides a balance of body parts for efficient locomotion and feeding. And then the last one I've got here is biradial symmetry, which is an intermediate between your radials and your pentaradials. And this allows for just a bit more specialized adaptation. So if you think you're completely radial, you're a jellyfish, you just have to be a bit more generic. You don't specialize one part. Whereas humans, you know, we have a very specialized head compared to, you know, feet. Not that specialized. And these are somewhere in the middle there. So yes, you do have other body plans, and consider them reeled off for you.
Nice.
Yes.
Radial one. Pentaradial. When you said that, I was like, actually, I can guess what this is.
Starfish.
Yes, we're starfish. Something five.
Something five. Yes. Yep. So yeah, a lot of different types. I think more than people think, but bilateral symmetry, when we think of animals, tends to be the overwhelming body plan. And I think that's why we find it so highly conserved across a lot of the animals that we look at. What I wonder, though, is whether that has come from like a single ancestor, or it's just convergently got that way. Like having eyes up front is obviously just seems to be a bit more beneficial than having one on your face and one on your ass, you know?
One on your hand. That's another one that people say. Would you rather have one in the back of your head and one like an eye in your hand?
I think back of the head, because
we're so different in this.
Just because you use your hands a lot. I poke myself in the eye all the time. That's going to hurt.
Yeah, but you can close your eyelids. Like you won't. There's an assumption here that like, yeah, it has to be like a working eye, and a part of a working eye is the eyelid. Like they're not like you having like you spray.
Close it. However, like if you close your eye and someone pokes you in it, it still hurts.
Yeah, well, how many times are you poking like the palm of your hand?
I don't know. I'm picking shit up. I'm stabbed myself by accident. You know, I'm typing. You know?
Okay. Well, how many times do you like lean back?
Not very often. Not when my head.
You're
touches
telling me the back of your head never touches any surface.
Not regularly. I'd say sleep. That happens.
Not
then,
on the race.
But like, I never really sit with my head back against my chair.
Well, you should. Your neck and back are crying out for...
Well, I got my lumbar pillow and my back one, which kind of puts your head a little bit forward. So I'm sitting with my back against the chair, but my pillow supports push my head away.
It's not good enough, mate. You're going to have to get your neck back. Well, you're going to have to do that exercise. I can never remember what it is, but you have to roll, where you roll your...
I don't know. Since I got these neck pillows, really sorted out my posture, it feels like, anyway. Back pain, thing of the past.
Thing of the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's starting to get to that age where I'm like, going to need to get up and do some stretches.
Standing desks are all the rage up here at the minute.
Do you know what? I thought about getting one. Grace has got one. Yeah. I was like, how about you go one step further and get a standing desk, but also get like a treadmill. Like a walking treadmill. Not like a running treadmill.
Yeah.
Walking treadmill.
Just one you can walk around on as you're working.
Yeah, just to get my steps in. Like those that 10,000 step count ain't going to get itself.
No, it's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. What have you got then?
I look at like the evolution of animal body plans.
Hmm. Interesting.
Some early concepts, some laws, some architect types, evolutionary architecture, that kind of thing. So the evolution of animal body plans is a complex process shared by genetics, development, obviously environmental factors, because what isn't in this world? This journey from ancestral forms to diverse organisms we see today is governed by principles first outlined by pioneers like von Baer, Owen, Darwin, Haeckel, and is now further understood through the lens of evolutionary development biology. Evo-devo, if is the short form, if you've never heard that, Tom, because I've never heard it.
What, evo-devo?
It's like, yeah, it's like the cool, it's like infosec.
Yeah, mate, we're just doing evo-devo all the time.
Why do you say all the, when you say all the time, is like the Australian South African twang coming?
I don't know. I can't control when it comes out, and it comes out far too often. Okay, and I'm trying really hard not to go into that accent now.
You work with like a bunch of people that don't sit on the internet 100% of their time, making the quote of like, "We talking meat?
We talking meat?"
Just be like, "We talking meat?" And then be like, "What?" I mean, like, I'm in person in work.
Yeah.
Situation where people are old and don't know the Big Les Show.
I also feel like people who do spend a lot of time on the internet could quite easily miss the Big Les Show as well. I do find it to be a niche part of knowledge that some people have and many others do not. Even that's among so sad. The internet-y folk.
Yeah, because it's so iconic. So iconic. I started watching it on my TV. I thought I'd give it like the space that it deserves.
Upgrade that MS Paint graphics to full screen TV.
Yeah, the space that it deserves.
For people who don't know what it is, since we've spoken about it is a cartoon, I think, drawn by one guy, frame by frame, in Microsoft Paint. Yeah, the graphics are as you would better than you would expect, but it's something. It's basically just a show about taking drugs, I guess, and Sasquatches and aliens and things. Honestly, it needs to be seen to be believed. It's a wild time.
It's a wild time. There are so many good quotes from it, but one is just the, what are you
talking
about?
Oh, yes, it's very quotable. What are you talking about?
Yeah, one guy does the music, does all the paint stuff, does all the voices, apart from a few where he had some people come in and do it for him, some of his mates.
It got big enough that he actually got a TV show.
Yeah, because like, he was like recording himself making it.
And he was like, it was like just fully on TV for a little bit. And now there's multiple seasons and different characters have their own spin-off shows. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, like the bit, because it wasn't the biggest... Yeah, there was a Big Les Show. And there's the construction dude. I always forget his name. Then you got Sassy the Sasquatch.
Yeah.
He's got his own. Sassy's got his own show, which I think is actually, I'm going to say better, but it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Like, you got the Mike Nolan's Long Weekend. The Mike Nolan
that's
show.
That's what, yeah, Mike Nolan, the worker. Yeah.
Season 1 is 11 episodes. Oh, maybe I'll just have to watch that. And each episode is like a couple minutes long.
Yeah. Like, it's all right, don't film in it. Because it's from the perspective that he's doing a documentary and he's like, yeah, mate, don't film in it. And then he films in it. He's like, yeah, he's cool. It's just the best.
It's good. Check it out. But let's get back on track.
Early concepts and laws of animal body plans. Von Baer's law, formulated in the 19th century, underscores the progression from general to specific characteristics during the development of an embryo, suggesting that the developmental trajectory of an organism is a reflection on its phylogenetic history. He posited that embryos of a group first exhibit generic traits before developing specialized features unique to their species.
It makes sense. And there are a lot of embryo stages that you can look at, fetal development stages, and it's actually quite hard to tell what animal it is. I've seen people, you know, people protest like Planned Parenthood and things like that because they don't think about their, you know, what other people are going through. And they're, you know, just trying to put their religious views on other people. But people will go up to those people and be like, oh, look at this photo of a fetus. Don't look how pressured it is. And they'll be like, yeah, but it's an elephant. Like, it's just very hard to distinguish at that stage because, as you say, they look very, very similar. It's very conserved.
Yes. Well, Baer's law, because they're very generic. I'm not saying that you're generic out there, but when you were very small, microscopic,
you're basic.
You're generic. You're basic. Everybody at one point in time was you're basic.
You're basic.
That's fine, nothing wrong with being basic. You then specialize later in life. Just like careers. You start, you're basic, and then you specialize. Me anyway. That's where I started. IT technician, you're basic. Specialize, cybersecurity.
I just kind of went down a road. I'm slowly specializing.
Went down a road.
Yeah.
I think you started specializing when you begin to do like your master's. I think you're then in the stage of, you know, I've specialized.
Well, I guess so. Maybe.
Like that's when you know you've.
Well, I guess here, even at uni,
here's my tree.
You specialize somewhat. You know, some people consider marine biology a specialization already. I somewhat don't, just because of how broad the field is, but I can understand why people might. Anyway.
Yeah. I think I'm one of those people.
Yeah. That's fair.
Form archetypes and evolutionary ancestry. The concept of body plans evolved from Owen's notion of archetype to Darwin's evolutionary framework. Owen envisioned an archetype as a divine blueprint common to animals with a phylum. Darwin's theory of evolution, however, replaced these idealized archetypes with a materialistic view, asserting that common body plans among animals are due to shared ancestry rather than a universal divine blueprint.
It makes sense.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, I guess evolution, it does tout the whole, you know, we're common, one common ancestor, right, to all living things. So it would make sense that we just kind of develop and tack on the homeobox gene as we need for our specific body plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess one of the things is like, how, as an embryo, does it know, did evolution act upon that development stage? But I guess it's the ones that had mutations to develop in a certain way, you know, even the mutations at the developmental stage have such a significant impact on, you know, resource gathering and ability to mate and travel and all of those things. So yes, makes sense.
Okay.
Yours.
Okay. So recapitulation theory and its fall. So Haeckel's biogenic law.
How's it spelled?
Haeckel.
Yeah, no idea.
Haeckel's biogenic law or recapitulation theory.
Oh,
Ernst Haeckel.
It would be Haeckel, wouldn't it? Suggested that the development of an individual organism, autogeny, replays the evolutionary history, phylogeny, of its ancestors. This concept, while popular and influential in the early development of Evo-Devo, we're now in with the crowd, we know what that means, faced criticism for oversimplifying and idolizing embryonic development stages. It was eventually debunked as researchers recognized that embryos of higher animals resemble the embryos, not the adults, of other animals, highlighting the complexity and uniqueness of developmental pathways.
I mean, it tracks. Mm-hmm. In the Evo Dev world.
Evo Dev world, as we know, we're now down with the kids. Today, the study body plans within Evo Devo focuses on the shared development programs that give rise to the basic anatomical structures within a phylum. The concept of the body plan is essential for understanding how developmental processes have evolved and diversified among the animal kingdom. Animals within a specific phylum share a set of anatomical features at some point during their life cycle, rooted in their common evolutionary history.
That makes sense. So this is a phylum being a specific grouping of animals.
Can you explain?
Right.
Can you explain what phylum is?
If you think about how we group animals, you have your species level, right? Homo sapien. Then you have your genus level, which is the Homo bit, and the other, for example, dogs are Canis familiaris, and then wolves are Canis lupus, I think. So, or dogs are Canis lupus familiaris, something like that. Anyway, by doing that, grouping them in such a way, the genus, we know that they're related. And then phylum is just a higher rating of that. I'm trying to remember the different. So a phylum would be Cnidaria, silent sea, mollusks, chordates, Ctenophora, Porifera, Annelida, which are all your worms, annelids, nematodes, which are a different type of worm as well, and everything with inside of this. So chordates are anything with a backbone, by the way. So that's most animals. If you think of an animal, like your generic one, you're probably thinking of a chordate. And then underneath chordate, you have your mammals, your vertebrates, your tunicates, and other things like that. So it's just a very high level of generic level of classification is your phylum. So I guess Cnidaria, every cnidarian, whether it's an anemone, whether it's a jellyfish, whether it's something else, has radial symmetry. Every chordate has bilateral symmetry because it has a backbone, and that's, you know, surprise, surprise, tends to go at the back. To have a back, mm-hmm. you need to have bilateral symmetry. so, yes. That's a phylum for you. Yeah.
Explaining. Appreciate it.
Explaining.
To those that don't know. All the biology stuff. What have you got, mate?
I just love it. Just absolutely love
it. Monologue for a while. Yeah, what you got going on?
One of the things I looked at was stem cell differentiation. So most cells in your body, once they are made, they replicate through mitosis. Bloody hell, it's been years since I've done that. Hang on.
Mitosis, meiosis, which one's which?
Mitosis or meiosis? Meiosis. Mitosis is the cell division of somatic cells, yes, which are body cells. So basically, the DNA will split apart, and then in mitosis, one cell will split into two daughter cells, whereas in meiosis, which is normally your gametes, so your egg and sperm, will split into two daughter cells, which will then further split before they you know, stop splitting for a little while. So mitosis in the body, you'll go from one to two, and in your gametes, you'll go from one to four cells. So somatic body cells, once they split, that's just like, I'm a red blood cell. I'm splitting into two red blood cells. That's it. you know, until they die. they cannot ever become something else. So stem cells, and you probably heard a lot about stem cells, mainly because the way that they got them, some people don't consider it to be ethical. But stem cells are special types of cells that have the ability to differentiate into any other type of cell in the body. Normally coming from bone marrow, a lot of the time coming from fetal development. Because when the egg and sperm fuse together, you end up as a clump of undifferentiated cells. These stem cells that can turn into any type of cell that they need to. And we can program stem cells to turn into certain types that we need to. That's what happens with growing tissues in labs. And I think you can also put stem cells into certain regions and they'll just kind of turn into the types of cells that are around them. Really, really cool things. And they're essentially the building blocks of our tissues and organs and can transform into more specialized cells with specific functions. No matter how specialized that cell is, a stem cell can become it. So yes, they're undifferentiated and they don't have a predetermined function like your heart cells do or your skin cells do. They divide and produce identical daughter cells, maintaining a pool of undifferentiated stem cells. And this kind of ability to self-renew is somewhat crucial within a stem cell population. Some stem cells are pluripotent, which means they have the potential to become nearly any cell type in the body, whereas embryonic stem cells, which have a wide range of developmental possibilities, and other stem cells are multipotent, which means they can differentiate into a limited range of cell types. And this is normally your stem cells that you have in adult life that will come from your bone marrow and found in some other various tissues. But what I was interested in is how do they know, especially at the developmental stage, to become a toe cell or, you know, a head, right? What's going on there? So the process of differentiation into various body parts is somewhat, well, it is very tightly regulated. And I've got a few steps here. So the first one is just genetic instructions from the homeobox genes, as we mentioned earlier. So these genes contain the instructions for the formation of specific body parts, and they are expressed, which means the genes are turned on or off. And that makes it seem like a very simple process. And all that means is not like someone's coming in and turning on a switch in the cell. When the DNA is read, there'll be a certain coding region. So DNA is made up of certain base pairs, and a little machine, an enzyme, will go along the DNA like it's the double helix structure and read it. And if there's a certain coding region beforehand, it will decide to copy that next lot or to not copy it. And if it copies it, it means that gene is turned on and it is being expressed because it is taking the DNA and going, okay, I'm going to copy this and then make that enzyme or protein or hormone or whatever it's that piece of DNA codes for. If a gene is not being expressed, then the region before that will tell the enzyme not to copy it. In very simple terms, I'm sure there's some genomic people out there crying at how I just explained that, but that's all you need to understand.
Butchering it. You're butchering our knowledge.
Then there are signaling molecules called morphogens, which is secreted proteins that create concentration gradients across tissues. The concentration of these morphogens act as positional information for cells, guiding them to develop into specific cell types based on their location within the embryo. An example, and you can tell nerds become biologists sometimes, is the Sonic Hedgehog morphogen. Which plays a role in limb development. So this morphogen gets built up concentration at specific regions, and it is transported away from the other ones. And where this specific morphogen builds up is where limbs tend to develop. You then have cell-to-cell communication. in the developing embryo, which communicate with each other through direct interactions. This communication normally involves the use of proteins on the cell surface that send and receive signals, influencing the fate of neighboring cells. So most cells have, you can think of them as little antennas or just little regions that will accept molecules that pass by. But they're very specific on the molecules that will fit inside of them. Think about a lock-in key mechanism, right? Only your specific key will open your front door, that kind of thing. Once the molecule gets inside that signaling mechanism, it triggers a certain chain of reaction which tell the cell what to do next. And because it's very specific and they have lots of different types, that's a quite efficient way to transfer information. Inside the body, at least. The extracellular matrix, which is basically just the gunk between cells, a network of proteins and other molecules surround the cells, and they provide physical support and also influence the cell behavior, as well as the physical properties of tissues also impact cell differentiation. So if you've got very hard cells, I'm trying to think about like keratin-based things, maybe, even though that's a protein, but bone, right? Calcification there, that's going to be a lot harder than skin or within your body cavity. So you have certain transcription factors as well as master regulators controlling the activity of numerous downstream genes. And this is what I was mentioning earlier. If you're transcribing the DNA, where exactly is that happening? And the proteins involved with that. And they orchestrate complex transcriptional networks and basically what part of the genome that they read. And then the last part is epigenetic modifications, such as DNA methylation and histone modifications play a role in regulating gene expression during development. So a methyl group may come on to certain part of the DNA and be like, yeah, come read this, please. And then later on, it'll be taken off. And they influence whether genes are, let's say, turned on or turned off. Yeah. DNA, bone formation is a wild one as well. Just how the structure for that happens is basically just a series of proteins that are wound together in long, thin, in a triple helix structure.
Yeah.
And then it just crystallizes. That's wild.
And then it just
crystallizes
one time and just goes,
yeah,
crystallizes,
and then it gets hard. It's like, this is my life now. Yeah. I am bone. Look at me, for yeah. I am bone. So yeah, that's stem cells. It's kind of wild. Again, it's still just kind of that magic box of I know I've just explained how it happens, but how does that happen, you know?
Yeah, we still...
unknown.
I've listened to you explain it, and I still just don't know.
Sometimes I have that. I explain things, and I'm like, right? Yeah, sure. I've said
that
it now.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, then? Any
other topics? Yeah, I've got some wacky ones. Some wacky body plans in the animal kingdom.
Okay, I'm ready.
Which... what? There was another name for body plan, which is like, what's it, Bouplan? Bouplan?
Blueprint?
Yeah, blueplane. Bowplane? This is actually body plan's blueprint. Actually, you know what? I haven't got... I thought they were... No, I've lost them. They're all gone.
Oh, mate.
You know what? Sorry, I've built everybody up. Wacky body plans.
What springs to mind to me is a wacky body plan is like a spider. Like, what's going on there? Why do you need eight eyes and legs? Pick a lane.
It's just a crab, isn't it?
It's essentially, it's a land crab.
it's just land crab.
Land crab.
Land crab meet dog crab. I'm trying to press dog Control crab. Z to try and get back, like, see if I can get the stuff. Yeah. Oh, such a shame. Here we go. Sea urchins, starfish, endoderms, which include starfish, sea urchins. They've got the five, the penta, as we've already said. Hallucinogena,
What are those?
It's a creature from the Cambrian period, which initially puzzled scientists due to its bizarre appearance of leg-like spines and a series of tentacles that did not seem to pair in a conventional manner. Initially reconstructed upside down and back to front, it wasn't until further discoveries and analysis, including an electron microscopy, that the true head of the hallucinogena was identified, revealing a face with optical pigments, a ring of platelets around the mouth, and a throat lined like needle-like teeth. This discovery not only corrected the organism's orientation, but also provided insights into the relationship with other animal groups. Hallucinogena is now considered an early offshoot of the lineage that led to the modern velvet worm, highlighting the piecemeal construction of body plans through evolutionary history. I'm going to assume it... Oh, it looks terrifying.
It looks like a bamzuki.
I was about to say it looks like a bamzuki. Right, okay. Describe people that haven't got Google close to them, but want to know what it looks like. Imagine you got like a worm, put tentacle-like legs on it, and then decided that you wanted
types of
to be like...
Look, you got
like
spindly legs at the front, like three set pairs of those, and then one, two, three, four, five, six pairs of stabby stabby more tentacly legs.
Yeah, and then thought, you know what, I like the idea of porcupines, but there just seems to be too many spines, so I'm only going to put 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 across the back of the spine of this thing.
Yeah, was this thing aquatic?
Yeah.
That's weird.
There's a video of it walking made by Cambridge University, which is, you know, love that they've done that. Oh, and it rears up on its back four legs?
Wow. Someone made a plushie.
Of course they did.
In stock. Course it's only $69.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice.
That's
wild.
Right. That was a wild one.
Yeah. It sort of reminds me of the Bobbit worm. I think it's the Bobbit worm. Bobbit worm.
I want to sleep tonight, don't I?
Absolutely terrifying. So a Bobbit worm is like a marine worm that just kind of sits in the sediment, waiting for like fish to swim by, and it'll just pop out and grab it. And you kind of look at it and go, okay, that's freaky and ugly. And then you also realize it's 3 meters long.
Yeah. Like, why not, hey? It's just, like, why not environment?
Yeah.
Earth, Mother Earth. Why not? Why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we do that?
Gross. No? Absolutely gross.
So many things that, like, lie in wait in the ground. It's like,
in
why?
The dark, waiting for
cold
you specifically.
Me?
Yeah.
Good thing I'm not going to be going out there down in the deep. I can imagine it's quite deep. Down
Bobbit
in the dark.
Worms?
Yeah.
Bobbit worms aren't that deep. I think they're shallow water, actually.
Yeah, but are they in any sort of waters that I'm going to be in? Like,
Let's see. Habitat. Maybe found prowling among prey-rich environments of coral reefs.
Yeah, like, I don't frequent coral reefs that much, so, you know.
Okay, but the next time next time I do,
I'm going to be like, Bobbit worm, Bobbit worm, Bobbit worm.
Yeah, just be like, Bobbit for days.
Yeah. Excuse me, sir. Yeah, have you seen any Bobbit worms around here? No? Okay, good.
Try and find Bilbo.
Yeah.
This is an example of an annelid, a worm. Segmented worm. See annelids?
Yeah. Warm marine waters. Mainly living in the Atlantic Ocean, but can also be found in the Indo-Pacific.
Pacific.
Yeah,
specifically
trying
to
trigger
one.
You there. Yeah. Bobbit worm, or bit two T's or one T. Sometimes called the sand striker.
Oh, don't give it a cool name like that.
I know the name associated with the trap jaw worm. Noted in 2021 to be found among fossils near Taiwan dating back to 20 million years.
Gross.
And chilling in existence for, you know, that's when they like, you know, they've peaked. When like it's
haven't changed.
Yeah, it hasn't changed in like X amount of years. You know, like, okay.
They're just waiting for that.
It's obviously
innovation.
Good at what it does.
Yeah. Like sharks. All they did was get
yeah,
smaller.
Like sharks. Yeah. Christ, sharks. Don't bring out sharks again. Justifiable fear of sharks. If anyone's like, you know what? I'm concerned about sharks. You'd be like, yeah, that's understandable. They're absolute killing machines.
Yeah, it depends where you are. Are you in the ocean? Justifiable.
Yes.
Are you
then
sat
you should be
at home?
Yeah, it's like the story about the work colleague who was scared of like crocodiles.
Right.
It'd be like, but that's not like a day to day. It's not like I can be walking around Plymouth being like, oh, there's a crocodile.
Yes.
But then her family was just like, yeah, we're actually going to go on a trip to Florida. Then you can just be walking around the streets yes. and be like, oh, look, it's a crocodile or an alligator. Sorry.
Then it is slightly terrifying.
Yeah. Then that unplausible thing that you didn't think could happen could definitely happen.
Sucks to suck, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. We've come up to the hour, over the hour. Anything you'd quickly like to speak about?
No, I'm good, thank you.
I was going to speak about how some animals change their body plan. They metamorphosize.
Oh, yes.
But we don't really have time for it. So I'll just let you know that caterpillars, when they go into their little pupal cocoon chrysalis stage, when they turn into butterflies, they don't just like grow wings and get smaller. They turn into, they just kind of melt and become like
They turn into a liquid,
a nutrient rich pool of proteins is how it was described to me.
Nutrient rich,
Which is utterly fucking gross. And then this liquid just kind of reforms into butterfly. It's gross.
Oh, you're being mean about the...
Look, at least they do it, you know, in their own space. They build a little house and they do it out of the side. Exactly. but yeah, they do have what are called imaginal discs, which are clusters of undifferentiated, essentially stem cells, which are pre-programmed to turn into wings and things when they go through this stage. So the caterpillar has the cells that are going to become the wings of the butterfly, but they just don't differentiate into them until they cocoon themselves away. So yeah. Cool. I'll leave you with some disgusting images this week. Apologies for that. And I guess that will bring us to a wrap. Don't forget to share this with your friends, families, co-workers, anything else that metamorphosizes. And if you want more fun information science, you can follow us on Twitter and TikTok at InfoEntropyPod, Instagram InformationEntropyPod. And of course, you can give us a rating, a like, comment, share, whatever it is. We appreciate that massively. Anything for you then, mate?
I was going to talk about called salamanders.
I actually mean
axolotls.
Yes. Oh, I forgot to update you all on the axolotl issue. Yes.
So I was going to mention how they go through morphosis as well, because you mentioned about the thingy.
They do,
If they're stressed or there's a specific form, they turn into from underwater living to landlubbers.
Yes.
And a lot of people that own them don't know that there even is a possibility that their animal can essentially evolve like a Pokemon to be land dwelling.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of deaths because of it.
Yes.
Sadly.
Speaking about a lot of deaths.
Oh, no.
I know someone who went on holiday, came back to their family, who was delighted to tell them they had bought a second axolotl and did not check the sex of that axolotl. So, you know, fast forward a month and they have, I think it was 600 eggs, 300 eggs, a few hundred eggs. To facilitate this, they then had to grow or start a brine shrimp farm inside their house so that they had they could farm brine shrimp and then feed the larvae to the developing 600 axolotls. Now, as you can imagine, the axolotls, which came out of their eggs first, started eating the other eggs. Just so, you know, quickly went down to 300 and then a couple hundred. But still, this took up, I think, a good 6 or 7 decent-sized fish tanks. And then you had the brine shrimp farm in the garage, which is another few fish tanks. I think it has finally crescendoed down into a single surviving baby.
A single
surviving baby. I think the brine shrimp farm crashed. I think the population of babies, you know, there was a lot of infighting in eating, and then also just a population crash at some point, and it was just very unsure what caused that. But as you were saying, that they can be quite sensitive to stress.
Yeah, they can.
So yes, considering it was not a planned breeding event, yes, they did very well for the few weeks and 600 sudden babies they had. But yes, so now they have 3 very healthy axolotls, but I'm unable to sell them for a fiver across the internet, as I promised last time. So yeah, that's the update you've all been waiting for. And I guess we'll end the episode there. So thanks for listening if you made it this far, and we'll catch you guys the next time.
Dabba-dum.